You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
On this week's tour around the NL Central, the All-Star rosters have been announced, and NL Central stars Ryan Braun and Starling Marte are up for the NL final vote. We'll also discuss the suddenly slumping Chicago Cubs and the resurgent Pittsburgh Pirates. And to that end, leading things off this week is Pirates reporter Adam Berry. Adam, we have a lot to discuss today, obviously. Let's begin with the call-up of Tyler Glasnow. I know that Pirates fans have been waiting and waiting and waiting, sometimes impatiently, to see this guy get the call to the show. He finally has. Just discuss that and discuss why now is the time that the Pirates decided we got to get this guy up to the big league roster.
Yeah, they've definitely been waiting for a long time. I joke that I'm happy for Glasnow to get a chance to make his major league debut tomorrow. Happy for the Pirates to finally push him through. And I'm happy for me because I don't have to answer any more questions about when Tyler Glasnow is coming up. They decided now is the right time just because they have this sort of opening in the rotation with John Neese getting his knee checked out. They wanted to give him an extra day. They're going to push him back to Sunday. And that opened up a spot in the rotation basically for another AAA starter. And it just so happens that Tyler Glasnow is lined up. Start Thursday, so they're going to call him up and have him start the series finale here in St. Louis. That'll be his major league debut, long-awaited. You've seen some better things lately in his last two starts as far as command goes, willingness to attack hitters and throw strikes. So I think the Pirates have been encouraged by the work that he's put in AAA. There's still no guarantee that he will remain in the rotation coming out of the All-Star break, because at that point you're going to start to see Gerrit Cole coming back. You're going to see Jameson Taillon coming back off the disabled list. So at that point they're looking at a lot of starters and only five spots. So it's probably not just a spot start, all things considered. You know, you're going to see Glasnow with a rotation later this season, I would imagine. But it's a very exciting moment for him, for the fan base, for the organization as a whole, because this is one of the top arms in all of minor league baseball. Guy was just electric stuff, high 90s fastball, great curveball, a changeup that he's been working on. So it'll be really fun to see how he does coming out in a pretty intense environment here in St. Louis against a really good lineup.
Yeah, a highly anticipated debut, to say the least, for Tyler Glasnow. And Adam, you brought up that his stuff and his makeup and his repertoire is, you know, second to none in terms of prospects in baseball. But you did mention that the one red flag concerning him, and I got this from our good buddy Jim Callis, he said that, you know, the one concern has been the command, has been the control, but you said it has been improved recently. Is that still something that the Pirates' brass is a little bit concerned about, or do you think that he's starting to turn the corner as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, I think it's definitely still an issue, and it could be an issue, you know, for the bulk of his career. He could just be a guy who runs up high walk totals but doesn't give up a lot of hits and strikes out a lot of guys. You know, A.J. Burnett was that way, if you want to talk about a recent Pirate, when he was a little bit younger, and he obviously made it work pretty well for himself. But I think it's more of a mentality with Glasnow. It's more just, you know, accepting the mentality that if you attack hitters more often than not, you know, it's really tough to hit a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. So I think once he kind of accepts that and just worries more about pounding the zone instead of trying to be too fine on the corners, he'll have a lot more success. He's done that the last couple of starts in AAA, so the Pirates are encouraged that, maybe he'll be able to do that, bring that mentality up to the majors, because, you know, hitters up here are a lot more patient. Typically, there's no weak spots in the lineup. Everyone has a pretty decent batting eye. So, you know, they're going to take, obvious balls on the edges of the strike zone. They're not going to, you know, just swing and miss at them like some AAA hitters, especially the bottom of AAA lineups might. So it's going to be a tough test, obviously, as it is for any pitcher making his major league debut. And this will be the fifth one we've seen for the Pirates just this season.
Yeah, I mean, the last few weeks have just been a flood of, young arms coming up from AAA. And what's interesting about the timing of this whole thing is that, you know, you brought it before, Jameson Taillon recently goes on the DL, so now they got to fill that rotation spot. And everybody in, you know, Pirates Nation screaming, it's got to be Taillon. Well, it wasn't. We saw the Major League debut last night, meaning Tuesday, of Stephen Brault. He was very good against the Cardinals, four innings and five runs. Four innings and five strikeouts, which is much better than five runs, as the Pirates run their winning streak to six. But kind of break that down for us, you know, why Brault got the call initially, and now we see a day or two later, not even, that it's going to be Glasnow's turn very soon.
So much of it is basically just about when the start comes up, you know, that they need to fill. You know, it's about who was lined up and in AAA because they have a lot of confidence in all of their top minor league arms, obviously, to come up and at least make one start, if not stick in the rotation. So it just so happened that, you know, Tyone needed to hit the disabled list, get a little proactive rest with the shoulder fatigue, and Brault was lined up to pitch. I think, you know, if Glasnow had been lined up to pitch or, you know, been able to pitch on extra rest, you would have seen him make that start last night. But instead, you know, the way it lined up, Brault came up through four innings, which is really the best he could do given his sort of limited pitch count in the minors. He was coming off of a hamstring injury. But then, you know, it lined up again. The Pirates could kind of make way, you know, adjust their rotation to fit in Glasnow. So, you know, it's not like they were holding him back intentionally. It was just a couple of times that they've had a spot open in the rotation. Glasnow was either just pitched or, you know, was just about to pitch, you know, in the middle of his throw day or something like that. So it's not like they were holding him back. It's just this is the way it worked out. And I think, you know, everybody will agree that once he gets up, it'll, you know, that'll all be a part of the past, not really worth complaining about anymore once he's up and pitching in the majors.
And, of course, you know, the bulk of the attention, and deservedly so, goes to Jameson Taillon and Tyler Glasnow. But Stephen Brault, in the middle of all this, you know, he comes up, like I said, the 5Ks and the four innings, a limited workload for him. But I got to think that, you know, judging from the admittedly small sample size, there's a lot to like about this guy, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, this is a guy who started last season in the Florida State League, the Class A, you know, Bradenton. So for him to come as far as he has, he was the player to be named later in the Travis Snyder trade, just an absolute steal for the Pirates. They got Stephen Tarpley, another pitching prospect, as well as Brault. You know, he's a lefty who can command three pitches, and the Pirates love their lefty starters, you know, especially in PNC Park and against the Cardinals, oddly enough. And it's, you know, you saw some potential there. He's a really athletic guy. He's really sharp. You go get a chance to watch his post-game interview. It's outstanding. One of the best interviews probably on the team already. That part of his game translated really well to the majors. But he's, you know, you like the stuff, you like the fastball. I think he's probably, he throws a little bit harder than some people might think when you see kind of a smaller lefty. He can ramp it up to 94 miles an hour, and when you have the off-speed stuff that he does, that plays pretty well.
Jennifer, let's dive right in. Carlos Martinez, the guy, has just been snake-bitten lately. Four really outstanding starts in a row and not a single victory to show for it. The Cardinals are somehow 0-4 in those games. You know, how taxing is it right now, not just for him, but for his Cardinals teammates to know that this guy's pitching his guts out and we're not supporting him in any way whatsoever?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about four starts, 27 innings in which he's allowed four runs total, and the Cardinals, as you mentioned, have not won any of those games. In a couple of instances, it was due to lack of run support. Other two games, it was due to a bullpen blow-up at the end. So, you know, this is a team that obviously is still trying to creep up and gain any kind of ground that they can against the Cubs, who have, you know, played pretty flat over the last month. And when you waste quality starts like this, as they have with Carlos the last four times through the rotation, those stink. And so certainly I think what we've seen from this offense over the last few weeks is a little more inconsistency than we did over the first 2 months of the season. And certainly, again, it's moving forward. If the Cardinals want to make a climb here and then certainly stay in the mix in the wild card race, these are the type of performances that they're going to have to maximize and make sure they can pull a W out of.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The Cardinals were huge fans of the Mets this past weekend. The Mets sweeping the Cubs in a four-game series at Citi Field, but the ground that the Cardinals gained was only minimal because of the struggles, as you said, the offensive inconsistency, and nothing to show for Carlos Martinez despite four outstanding starts. Want to backtrack to last weekend's sweep over visiting Milwaukee. Jaime Garcia, this guy continues to be rather an enigma, Jennifer. He's had his two best starts of the year have both come against the Brewers. He had back in April that one-hit shutout, 13 Ks. He was also very good a couple of days ago, eight innings, I believe, four hits, maybe one run. But against teams not named Milwaukee, his ERA is 4.62. As I said, is he still the biggest enigma in this Cardinals rotation?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, the biggest question with him for the last several years is, can he stay healthy? And, you know, this year he's been able to stay healthy. He's kind of put that to the side, and yet he's been more inconsistent this year than ever before. I mean, we saw last year when he came back after that shoulder issue, and you could argue that he was, you know, from the middle of May when he returned to the end of the season, the Cardinals' best, most consistent starter. You know, I thought it was interesting in talking to him over the weekend after his start against Milwaukee. He actually talked about this idea of having to learn how to pitch healthy again, which seems really silly because you would think that's the position you'd want to be in. But his point was that, you know, hey, it's been 5 years since I've had to take on a full starter's load and had to pitch every 5 days and have to, you know, look toward maybe throwing around 200 innings. And that's the kind of workload that he hasn't had to shoulder because of, you know, no pun intended, shoulder and other arm issues. So I think he's learning how to pitch healthy again. He's learning how to control his movement, feeling stronger. Again, a lot of times the strength that he has by being healthy is now creating a little more or a more unpredictable movement than he's used to. So interesting to kind of wade through some of these new issues for him. Good sign, of course, is that he is healthy. And I still think that he is a guy, if he can stay healthy, it could certainly pick it up in the second half and be a good part of this rotation.
Yeah, very interesting way for him to explain the inconsistency is that sometimes your body feels too healthy and too strong. You have to reacclimate to that after you've been hurt for so long. So very interesting explanation there by Jaime Garcia. We'll see what happens moving forward. And Jennifer, a very small sample size, but want to get your thoughts on the first two closing debuts of the final boss, Singuano. Saturday, he was brilliant, worked a perfect night, 13 pitches, 2 Ks. Sunday, a mixed bag, gave up a hit, a run, and he actually walked two. He still did have the two strikeouts. So, again, a very, very small sample size, but your very early impressions of Singuano.
Well, he is living up to his nickname now, the final boss. It didn't just fit as well in the seventh or eighth inning, but he is going to get the opportunities. I mean, he's pitched well. I would say this last week has been one of his rockier weeks of the season. We saw even the two appearances leading up to those two save opportunities a little bit rough for him. You know, and that's probably to be expected. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, a lot of teams didn't know, had very little familiarity with. And now he's going to slowly become a known quantity. He's facing teams, you know, here like the Brewers and the Pirates, for the third or fourth series already this year. Teams are going to figure him out. They're going to start to adjust. He's going to have to start to adjust back. Now, that being said, you know, Mike Matheny still refuses to name a new closer. As he put it the other day, we're not going to go put a C on anybody's chest. So why do we have to kind of give anybody that label? But it's pretty clear right now that Trevor Rosenthal is just not right. He's not going to go back to him anytime soon. And you know, we can't argue with the Cardinals for wanting to go with a guy like Oh, who, you know, over a very decorated career in Asia, collected 357 saves. So that ninth inning is going to be his for the foreseeable future. And really, he lives up not only to the final boss nickname, but the Stone Buddha nickname as well, which is a pretty awesome nickname, I might add. But very unflappable in the ninth inning, and we've seen that thus far in that small sample size.
Let's dive right in. A very well-deserved day off for the Reds this past Thursday after taking 2-3 from the Cubs. And, you know, Mark, it's no secret the Reds were pretty much a punching bag for the Cubs, you know, all season long. But to go into Wrigley Field, take 2-3, that's got to feel good for a team that, you know, has to really search for positives this season with the way they've been struggling.
You're certainly right. It's been a rough year. The Cubs and Chris Bryant in particular has just abused them for the better part of, I think, 12 or 13 games. And this isn't a season where silver linings are really appropriate, probably, but what they did find was that they were able to stand up to a team that gave them a lot. Like in one of the games, they were Brandon Finnegan, kind of as Brian Price said, he did bend, but he did not break. He was able to keep them ahead, and then they were able to hold off the Cubs and get a kind of a gritty win. And then on the last game there, Anthony DeSclafani pitched a gem, and the bullpen, which has been much better in the last week or so, helped it hold up. So It's been a good week for them, and they're going to try to finish it off here with three games in Miami and see if they can go into the All-Star break with something to be pleased about.
Yeah, no question there. It always feels good to, you know, kind of punch the bully in the mouth, as the Reds did this past weekend, in the bully's backyard, no less. And, Mark, you brought up the pitching, which has been improved. You brought up the good start by DeSclafani, the good work in the bullpen by Michael Lorenzen and Tony Cingrani and company. That brings us to the shakeup with the coaching staff this past week. Mark Riggins dismissed from his position as pitching coach. That now goes to Mac Jenkins and Ted Power. And first of all, what a great name that is. He's the new bullpen guy after spending many years as a AAA pitching coach, I believe. So obviously you're happy for Jenkins and for Ted Power, but you got to feel a little bad for Mark Riggins simply for the fact that it was an uphill battle for him all year, not to make excuses, but so many injuries to this staff, so much attrition, young guys getting called up perhaps before they were quite ready. And so, you know, he's a great guy. He's got a good track record. You got to feel a little bit bad for him, don't you?
Oh, certainly. You know, one thing, of course, fans don't get to see this kind of stuff as much, is that Mark Riggins was a tremendously good person. And, you know, even good people, of course, can lose their jobs, but he was always willing to work with anybody. He was easy to communicate with, but at the same time, there weren't results. And that's how the club felt, is that they had a lot of young pitchers, and they just felt they weren't going in the right direction. They were getting hammered with home runs and walks. They're on pace, on a record pace right now, to smash the all-time single season home run record of home runs allowed. So they really are going to try to get back to basics and get these pitchers to establish throwing their fastballs for strikes, and then working from that into their other stuff, whether it be a slider or a changeup or anything like that. But they just really need to start getting a hold of the strike zone again and figuring that out and getting some deeper starts. It's been a rough road for some of these guys. As you know, like Brandon Finnegan, the last couple of starts has been giving up a lot of home runs. John Lamb has struggled his last couple of starts. But on the other side, you have Anthony DeSclafani, like you mentioned, kind of showing some guys the way that you can, be efficient. You can throw strikes and navigate your way through a game. And they need more DeSclafani starts and less like the last couple from Finnegan.
Yeah, no question there. And as we've discussed in recent weeks, we have seen some signs of improvement from not just the rotation, but the bullpen as well. So hopefully a sign of things to come in half number two for this Cincinnati Reds pitching staff. And Mark, getting to All-Star discussion that, of course, is right around the corner. And what kind of odds would you have put on Adam Duvall All-Star back in spring training? I mean, what a great story this is for him.
It really is. I would have given the odds as being about zero, because he was going to be a platoon player with Scott Schebler, who is now in AAA, and Duvall emerged as the guy, the left fielder. And he pretty much established himself right away in April. He was hitting home runs. He actually played a surprisingly quality defense in left field, a position he wasn't that familiar with. He didn't play it a whole lot in his minor league time. He was more of a corner infielder. So it's been a nice run for him. He's going to be, he still hits a lot of home runs, and he's got a great slugging percentage, and he's got the extra base hits. He's not walking a lot. He's kind of an anomaly. He's slugging nearly 600, but he's got an on-base percentage of below 300. So it's he's not exactly a sabermetrics person, favorite kind of guy on the offensive side, but as a person who's kind of kept his head down, he's quiet. He doesn't make a lot of waves. He just does what he can, and he's been a nice boost for the Reds. He's considering that they basically traded Mike Leake as a rental player to the Giants and got Duvall and another great highly touted pitching prospect in return. So that's proving to be a really nice trade for the Reds. And not only is Duvall a first-time All-Star, he's also going to represent in the Home Run Derby.
And, Kerry, we thank you for the time, as always. And, Kerry, tough stretch for the Cubs, obviously, right now. Back on June 19th, after winning that day, they were at their high water mark of the season at 27 games over 500. Since then, just 5-12. Now, the loss, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, of Dexter Fowler has been a very big factor. He is on the comeback trail, hopefully. We'll address that in just a little bit. But getting back to the struggles of the team, in your eyes, what has been most concerning about this recent 5-12 stretch that they've been on the last 3 weeks?
Well, it really just shows the impact that Fowler had on the team when he signed. And it's not just it's not that Ben Zobrist is not doing the job as the leadoff man. It's that they miss having Zobrist. What Madden likes to call a Rizzo sandwich. He would have Zobrist and Bryant batting around Rizzo, either Zoe in front and then Bryant after him, or flip-flop. And by not having that, it's affected the rest of the lineup. So it's sort of a combination, not just of losing Fowler, but the effect it has on the rest of the lineup by filling in for him and losing Zoe later in the lineup.
And, Kerry, as far as the pitching goes, it's a very small, tiny, minute sample size. But in six games so far in July, the Cubs pitching staff dead last in the majors in team ERA, which is above 7 right now. We hear that when you're having success, that can be contagious from one star and one starter to the next. Are we seeing the same thing at the other end of the spectrum, where one guy struggles and the bleeding continues and nobody's been able to go out there and really stop the bleeding so far?
Well, Kyle Hendricks did a good job in terms of stopping it. I really think people need to be a little more realistic regarding the Cubs' expectations. There's no way that Arrieta, Lester, Hamill, that these guys are going to have, maintain that pace for the whole season. I mean, teams go through cycles, teams have little bumps. air bump just happened to be in New York against the Mets, which didn't look good. And they struggled a little bit against the Nationals, which didn't look good, and the Marlins. The Reds came in here and were in attack mode. I think it's cyclical, and I think it's just kind of that stretch right now where the guys are struggling. It's probably a good idea that they had Adam Warren. They inserted him as the sixth man in the rotation on Wednesday against the Reds to give everybody a breather. You know, the starters aren't going to say that they need that, but it certainly is should pay off in the long run.
Yeah, and was that an idea brought about by Joe Maddon to give Warren that spot start? Because did he kind of sense that, you know, my guys are wearing down, and even to give them an extra day of rest between starts is going to be beneficial? Did that come from Maddon himself?
Well, I think it was Maddon and pitching coach Chris Fazio and kind of a collective thought. Early in the season, they'd had kind of built-in off days with days off, with rainouts. They were able to give everybody a little bit of a breather. They're in a stretch right now of 24 straight games leading into the break. And I think it's just, one, let's let everybody take a deep breath. And two, let's see what Adam Warren has. You know, the Cubs have the luxury of having a 9-game lead or a significant lead in the division. So they have the luxury of being able to send Warren out there and see what they have. You know, really, if they needed a sixth starter, he's the guy. And it was good to get him stretched out at Iowa. He made 2 starts down there before his game on Wednesday against the Reds. So now at least they know what they've got.
And Warren, it was quite an outing for him on Wednesday because he gave up a leadoff homer to the first guy he faces, Zach Cozart. Then that was it through 5 innings, I believe, just the 1 run on the 3 hits. And he looked pretty impressive to me, Carrie.
Yeah, he did. And Cozart battled him. I mean, it was a 10-pitch at bat for the leadoff man, and then he homered on the 10th pitch. And then Warren said he felt good because he was able to settle down. One of the things he did when he was made his minor league starts was he used all his pitches, and that helped him. That's something he needs to get back to. So he was able to do that against the Reds, and he feels a lot better about his outing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely, even though they lost, a good sign for the Cubs that they got Warren out there for 5 innings of 1-run ball, and as you said, a valuable 6th starter should they need one somewhere down the road, whether guys need rest or somebody gets hurt. That's a very good option to have. Carrie, want to backtrack a little bit to the offensive end of things. You brought up Dexter Fowler. It seems like he's on the comeback trail. I believe that the Cubs want him to rehab prior to the All-Star break. What's the status on him?
Yeah, Fowler was named the starter to the National League team, All-Star team, but he hasn't played since June 18th because of a hamstring injury. So the goal, hopefully, now we're talking Thursday afternoon, the goal is to have him play some minor league games by the end of this week, which would be, if today's Thursday, there's not much end of the week left, because they don't want him just going from the disabled list to the All-Star game. They need to make sure that he's ready. It's more important for him to be ready for the second half than it is for him to be ready for the All-Star game in San Diego. And I know that's hard for Dexter. That might be hard for Dexter to understand. We haven't talked to him. We talked to him Wednesday. We didn't get a chance to talk. Or I'm sorry, we talked to him Tuesday. Didn't get a chance to talk to him Wednesday. So I think today is kind of a key day to figure out where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely. One of many Cubs voted to the Midsummer Classic in San Diego, which we're going to touch on in just a bit. And, Carrie, of course, now that we're well into the month of July, we're going to hear lots of chatter and discussion about the trade deadline coming up. Now, in our neck of the woods here in New York, we hear a lot of talk about, you know, the Yankees, for instance, are kind of floundering around .500 all season, but they've got that lights-out bullpen of Betances and Miller and Chapman, obviously, who spent his entire career in the NL Central before this year. Now, is there that same sort of discussion in your neck of the woods in Chicago where the Cubs, you know, I mean, no bullpen's going to be perfect all year. We're obviously seeing that. Trevor Cahill had some struggles on Wednesday. But is there any chatter or discussion, again, on your end, on the Cubs' end, about, you know what, we're going to aggressively explore an option here for a lights out reliever or even some help in the rotation? What's been the talk there?
Well, they are always on the lookout for help, but people have to remember the bullpen lately has not had Adam Warren and it's not had Clayton Richard. And because Richard's been taking care of a nail injury and a blister that he had, and Warren's been getting prep for the rotation. So that's two key pieces that have been out of there. They tried Joel Peralta. That didn't work. He was designated for assignment. There might be a sleeper in-house in Joe Nathan, who's been rehabbing at AA Tennessee. They've got Brian Matus, I think that's how you pronounce it, getting some work in at Mesa. He might be another option. Last year, they picked up Cahill and Richard late in the season, and both of them were nice surprises for the Penn. And I think they're looking more for that than to make a big splash, as much as the New York media would like them to think that they will make a big splash.
Adam, thank you so much. For the time, the final podcast before the All-Star break, hard to believe that it's coming up so quick. And Adam, let's kind of break things down. Last night, meeting Tuesday, Zach Davies, a very solid start against Washington, and now the news comes today that he was actually optioned to AAA. Now, for fans that see this at first glance, they're thinking, wait a minute, he's been our best starter, our most consistent starter pretty much all season. He's optioned to AAA, but kind of break that down and just tell us why this is not by any means a demotion and more of a strategic move by the team.
Wait, you think people got overreacted on Twitter? That sounds so unlike.
I know. I'm as shocked as you.
Yeah, it's a paper. I mean, you can't do paper moves at this level, but it's basically a paper move. It's Davies wasn't going to start again before the break. The Brewers have been playing with a short bench, as Craig Counsell noted, for basically 2 months. They've been playing with an extra bullpen arm. So this was an opportunity to send Davies down, not interrupt his normal schedule at all, except for the fact he's going to have to fly to Colorado Springs, which is inconvenient, but not a total killer. And they bring up Andy Wilkins, a left-handed bat. He was a waiver claim last winter. He's been playing first base and right field at AAA. And he gives them kind of that extra lefty bat. When they've been playing, when they've had a lot of lefties in their lineups, they have been completely without left-handed hitters on the bench. So he kind of balances things out for a little bit. So, yeah, it's inconvenient for Davies, who have to travel. But for these final, it's four games before the break, and then the first two games after the break, they'll have this extra bat, and Craig Counsell just has kind of an extra weapon at his disposal. Davies loses a little bit of service time. He wasn't jumping up and down about it. But again, teams do this, you know, he'll be back and starting that third game out of the break and back in the rotation. And you're right, he's been, if you go back over his last month plus, 2 months, he's been one of their more reliable guys, and he pitched a really nice game here in Washington. And the Brewers have played the Nationals very tough. They've won four of the first five. They've been really close, entertaining games. Jeremy Jeffress is getting a bunch of saves in these games. It's been the pitching, really, that's fueled these victories against a first-place team, and Davies has been part of that.
So hopefully the fans that overreacted on Twitter can calm down a little bit. I know it's asking a lot with social media these days, but you provided the explanation of why Zach Davies is in AAA currently, simply a paper move. He'll be back. And Adam, tell us about Andy Wilkins a little bit. I think this was a guy that was not really on the radar, maybe even as early as spring training, but he's kind of emerged in the first half of the season, and he's kind of really earned this call-up, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's played well, and he's had a couple of solid months. June was his best month, an on-base of .375 or so. You know, he's playing a great offensive park, and he's a good hitter. He's had a 30-homer season at the AAA level for the White Sox in 2014, got a little call-up to Chicago. He hasn't stuck in the major leagues, but he's been kind of right on the cusp. And when the Brewers picked him up, first base is a position that's been in flux really since Prince Fielder left after 2011. And I think anytime they pick up a first baseman who has any experience at all, you sort of take note because you just don't know what's going to happen there. Chris Carter, though, has grabbed that spot. He's become the everyday guy. 20 homers before the break. He's, I think, the 12th different player to do that in Brewers history. So Wilkins has been down there kind of biding his time at AAA. So this is a good little audition. We don't even know if he's going to get a start here. Craig Counsell wouldn't say. You know, he might just kind of be a bench. But you don't know when you have an opportunity to come in and win a game. So I think it's an opportunity for him to open some eyes with the way he works. But, again, the best-case scenario here is that this is a short stay, and come the Sunday after the break, he'll be headed back to AAA.
And speaking of that All-Star break, two players that could both be in San Diego for the All-Star game, one for sure in Jonathan Lucroy, and one perhaps, depending on the final vote, in Ryan Braun. Lucroy voted in by, or not voted in, but selected by manager Terry Collins. And let's start there with Lucroy. I think it speaks volumes that, you know what, when you think of National League catchers for so long, the cream of the crop, at least in the eyes of the fans, has been Yadier Molina and Buster Posey. Posey voted in as the starter from the Giants, but I think for Lucroy to gain this selection by the manager Terry Collins over a guy like Molina, who has had some health issues this year, I think that says a lot, considering Molina's pedigree and how respected he is within the game and throughout baseball. But to have Lucroy again be the pick of Terry Collins has got to mean something to him, I would think.
It does, and I'll tell you, the other thing that means something is you think about Lucroy's last season. He was so good in 2014. He started the All-Star game in Minneapolis that year. He finished fourth in the MVP balloting. He really was in the discussion of the elite players at that position. Then last season was a total dud. It started with a slump coming out of camp. Then he broke a toe on a foul tip and was out for an extended period of time. Then he had a concussion late in the season and was limited again, and it was just basically a nightmare of a season. And he performed well enough in the second half that it didn't look horrible on paper, but it certainly was a fall off from the year before. And what he's done is played himself now back to that 2014 level. And you look at any statistic, and Jonathan Lucroy has been the second best catcher in the National League to Wilson Ramos, not Posey or Molina. Ramos has this thing kind of running away this year in terms of his offensive contributions. But Lucroy has been right there. He's back to being in the discussion, at least of the elite catchers in this game. It's why his name is popular in the rumor mill this year. And, you know, interestingly, he was vocal in January about not really wanting to be part of a rebuild. We talked about this a lot early in the season, Matt. And it hasn't come up since then. He's kind of put that aside. I think he learned some lessons there about what you can and cannot control as a player and the benefits versus the risk of speaking out about, you know, your opinion of your team's big picture. He sort of shut that down now, and he's been focused on just trying to have fun. Sounds simple. Sounds overly simple, I think. But for a player going through, the middle years of his career, I think it was a lesson for him, and I think he's taken some positives from it, and obviously his performance says that he's succeeding.